The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Carla's Comfort Foods, written by Carla Hall. All her foods right here in this book. Well, maybe not all of them, but a lot of great cooking ideas. Carla, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be here.
All right. Now, you're also a co-host on The Chew. We'll talk about that a little later.
Okay.
But let's first talk about Carla's Comfort Foods. What kind of a cookbook is this?
Well, the first cookbook, Cooking with Love, was kind of like a biography, and it took you from my Sunday suppers in Nashville, Tennessee, through Top Chef, through catering, so those recipes. And here in this book, I'm exploring how comfort foods have commonalities around the world. Because I think when you think about comfort food, you see me, I'm black and I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. You think macaroni and cheese, collard greens, cornbread, smothered pork chops or smothered chicken. And truly, that is my comfort food. But I really wanted to show how, as people, we're very similar. And in 2012, when you look at the political climate and how dysfunctional and polarizing it is to whatever differences we as people have, it's kind of disgusting and sickening. So I said, I wonder how I can show through food we're very similar and those differences that we have should be celebrated and embraced. So let's take smothered chicken, which you'll have in the South, and that's with the milk gravy. But if you take the milk out and you add sour cream and paprika, you could be in Hungary. Or if you take the milk out and you add heavy cream, Dijon mustard, white wine, and tarragon, you could be in France. But those are both smothered chicken dishes. You can look at them like that and just change the spices and have a new dish.
Well, like with cake, sometimes you can take something out of it and put applesauce in it.
Right.
You can use sour cream in place of other things, yogurt.
Correct.
I mean, is that taking you to different countries also, or is that just...
I think those substitutions are more... They're not spices. They are more about changing either the fat content or changing a texture in that cake. Whereas when you look at the groupings of spices, so I have an international spice chart in the book, and it has 18 different cuisines, and it shows you the aromatics, which will be onions, peppers, garlic, those fresh ingredients, and then it will show the fresh herbs, and then it will be the spices that make that cuisine unique, and whatever miscellaneous ingredients that make that cuisine unique. And so if you do a meatloaf, and you know how to do your meatloaf. And I'm just saying, what if you wanted to take that quintessential American meatloaf and make it Greek, let's say? So now you're going to add probably some kind of lemon. You're going to add coriander and cumin and maybe some mint. And maybe instead of the tomato sauce on top, you're going to serve it with a tzatziki, like a cucumber yogurt sauce. And that's what I mean about traveling with spices.
So how different of a taste is that?
Oh, it's different. So you're going from carrots, onions, and celery maybe in your meatloaf to now something brighter, and you have more spices, and you have that taste of fresh herbs and mint in the meatloaf. So it's giving you a taste of how they eat Mediterranean food. And I think it's subtle. There's subtle differences, but you can still relate to the dish because it's meatloaf, and you know meatloaf. So it's kind of traveling in a safe place, because I think people are so afraid to use spices. I think they like their salt and pepper, or they like what they like, and they don't want to really venture out. What I am really trying to do is to make these recipes very approachable. One of the things that people think about when they look at international food is that they have to go to an international market to get certain ingredients, specialty ingredients. Although our world has gotten so much smaller in terms of what is available in the regular grocery store, but I've stuck with the most common ingredients to make this cuisine change, you know, very approachable. I've also thought about doing recipes during the week because we're so busy. And that is one of the barriers, I think, when people think of trying something new. Oh, I don't have time. You know, I'm really busy. I really want to get dinner on the table. So I'm going to do just the normal or the fast dish that I already know. So I thought about that. I thought about how many pots and pans, you know, you may use. I really tried to think about all of the excuses someone would use to not try a new recipe and to get make this book or this cookbook something that you could really use in your everyday life.
So, Carla, if I were outside your studio, the Chew, and I'm just kind of hanging around, and most people feel sorry for me, and you felt real sorry for me.
Uh-huh.
And you said, come on, I'll take you home. The family, they'll feel sorry for you, too. But what would be something quick you might cook up for me?
Well, Mark, I'm looking at you right now, and I'm feeling so sorry for you.
I know.
I would probably do the paprika chicken for you. I think that you like your comfort food. I don't want to stray too far. So do you like spice?
I like spice.
You like spice? So you like pan-seared chicken kind of seasoned nicely?
I love it that way. I love it fried. I love chicken anyway.
Okay. So I'm going to take some chicken thighs, and I'm going to sear them. And then I'm going to take some serrano chilies. I'm going to throw that in there with some garlic and some scallions and some onions. And then I'm going to put in some paprika. I'm going to toast up those spices because when you toast the spices, they come alive and all of those oils come out. And that's when you get that really good flavor. And then I'm going to take this sauce and finish after I've seared the chicken. I'm going to simmer that for about 30 minutes. And then I'm going to take the chicken out, and there's that nice sauce in there because I threw in some chicken stock, and that's all getting bubbly and yummy. And then I'm going to take it off the heat. I'm going to stir in some sour cream, and that's going to make that sauce nice and thick. Then I'm going to take that chicken and put it back into that sauce, and it's so creamy and spicy and delicious. And I'm going to give it to you with a little salad, and you're going to say, Bob's my uncle.
There you go. And you know, Carla, you're amazing. Now, are you psychic? Because I love chicken thighs and everything you explain there. I just, It sounds great.
Mm-hmm. It sounds great. And it's all of the ingredients that you know, but maybe you don't use, maybe you only use paprika on top of your potato salad, or maybe you only use paprika on top of your deviled eggs. I am taking that paprika into a dish and giving you another use for it.
A different sight and taste, I guess.
Huh? Yes.
Because cooking, most of the time, maybe all the time, it's what you're looking at before you consume the food.
Absolutely. But the thing is, when I teach a cooking class, and actually years ago, I taught a class to Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind. And I wanted to teach that class because I really, selfishly, wanted them to help me learn how to teach somebody who couldn't see how to cook because they're using all of their senses. And I oftentimes talk about cooking with love. But basically, when you love something, it's like you feel it in your entire being. So when you're cooking, it's not just your sight. So often, I think people don't really cook that much anymore. And so they rely so heavily on the written word, the recipe, and they think that it is the scripture. I mean, they cannot go off that path. So what I tell them is, you know, when you're putting something in the pan, you hold your hand over to see if it's hot enough. You look to see, when you put that oil in, does it have those little dimples and those ripples? And then do you hear something when you're putting that in this case, the chicken thighs in that pan? Because if you hear something, that means it's searing and your meat is starting to brown and caramelize and you get that fond. And then you are smelling the chicken before you even know to turn it over. The smell changes because now it smells like it smells more cooked and that skin is cooking. So you're cooking with everything and you're tasting as you go. So it's the touch and the sense of smell and your sight and your hearing. All of that is going into cooking. And I think we leave so many of our senses out when we're cooking.
You know, I'm getting hungry here just doing this interview. I want to change gears here just a second. You know, I'm looking at you. You're such a beautiful woman. You should have been like a model or something.
Check. I did that, Mark. You knew
You've
that.
You've done it all.
Yeah. I was an accountant, and I don't have my beans here that you could have, you know, sussed that out. I worked for Pricewaterhouse. I got my CPA. I did not like it. And my biggest fear was being 40 and hating my job. So I quit my job, and I had done some fashion shows at Howard University. I'd done a little bit of modeling in Tampa, Florida, when I was working for Pricewaterhouse. And I met these girls who were going to France, and I said, oh, wow, that sounds amazing. I hate my job. I think I'm going to do it, you know, because my biggest fear was being 40 and just sitting in an office and wasting away. So, I mean, I was fortunate enough to be able to do that, and I had one telephone number and 10 words of French. So let me tell you, so when I was in France, again, I took Spanish in high school, so I didn't know French. So I went to a pâtisserie to order a croissant. So I go downstairs, and I'm like, un croissant du beurre, s'il vous plaît. The woman says, un croissant du beurre. And I'm like, un croissant du beurre, please, s'il vous plaît. She's like, un croissant du beurre, and her lips were turned down, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna starve here. I'm never gonna be able to order food. And this was in the late 80s. I remember, and I started mimicking people. I started using my theater that I did as a kid and just mimicking people just to get by. When I went to London, I said, can I have some water, please? You know, I was just so I didn't want people to say, I don't understand what you're saying. So, yeah, a little bit of theater. But so I did model a little bit, and then fell in love with food in the kitchens in Paris. And then I started a lunch delivery service as a fluke. And I did that for 5 years before I went to culinary school. But I was 30 years old when I went to culinary school.
Well, when you were ordering there in France, did you just tell her that's how they speak in the southern part of France?
Right. Exactly right. You know, they didn't want to hear that at the time. I remember pointing to many foods when I was in Milan, just pointing to something that I saw that looked good. And I remember thinking, oh, wow. And honestly, I was not an adventurous eater. I had fish sticks, you know, when I was growing up. So I looked over at this table and it looked like these battered things that were fried. I'm like, oh, I want those. And they're like, okay. And they come to me and they're sardines. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't eat this. So, yeah.
So a lot of your ideas for Carla's Comfort Foods, your first book, come from when you were overseas in Milan, France?
Yes, some of them, because I do have favorites over there. They came from my travels. Of course, the mushy minted peas came from my time in London. A lot of the Indian foods that are in here, I haven't been to India, but I love Indian food, and I probably have it at least, you know, two or three times a month. They're just from going to my favorite restaurants and having really good Indian food. I love the palak paneer that's in the book. And just teaching people how easy it is to take ricotta cheese and to make it into paneer by pressing out the water is so easy. And then you sear it up. But I used to be a private chef in the Bahamas. So the souse, that's a chicken soup with lots of lime and allspice, that's in here. That's from my travels. I mean, you may have to substitute lemon right now because limes are so expensive. Oh my gosh. All citrus is expensive. So maybe you wait to do that dish.
Carla, let's find out a little bit about the Chew. How did you go from accountant to working on the runways in Milan and Paris to having a show on the Chew?
I really have to give a lot of credit to the Top Chef franchise. So I did Top Chef twice. I did season 5 and then All Stars. When I won fan favorite in All Stars, it was right at the time that they were looking to... They had been shooting this pilot for the Chew, and they brought me in with Mario, Michael, Clinton, and Daphne. They brought some other people in, but the 5 of us were only together for 20 minutes. And 6 days later, they announced us as a cast, which was crazy. But we really felt the magic when we had to shoot the promos, and so we're doing the commercials, we're doing the print stuff, and we were together all day, and it was like this amazing play date. It really was. And I remember Mario turning to us and saying, this is going to be a success. This is going to be a hit, because we all felt it. We all felt that connection and magic that we had together.
From the View to the Chew, huh?
I know, right? From the View to the Chew. And, you know, for the longest time, the first season, when people would say, so what do you do? I love you on Top Chef. What are you doing now? I'm like, oh, I'm on this show on ABC called The Chew. What? The what? And I'm like, it's like The View, but with food. And I would start, you know, mouthing, you know, chewing on my tongue so they would understand I'm chewing. They're like, oh, okay, I understand.
So if you've never seen The Chew, explain to me the format on that show.
We have 7 segments. We start out, the 5 of us, just chatting about food and whatever topic we want to talk about. And we have a dish, and we just sort of talk and eat and set up the show, whatever the theme is. And then we do little segments on cooking demos. We have guests. We have celebrity guests. We have competitions. We have our viewers sometimes come and cook with us. We have Clinton's Craft Corner, Judge Foodie. So we have all of these signature segments, Michael's 5 and 5, where he cooks in 5 minutes with 5 ingredients to show how quick and easy it is to make a really good home dish, home-cooked meal. You know, I do my baking segments, and it really is food, life, and fun in the kitchen. Daphne does a lot of healthy segments. Yeah, and we try to do everything related to food, from entertaining to cooking to hosting parties. And that's what the show's about.
How come you're not 500 pounds?
Oh, dude, let me tell you. So I know, not yet. But when the show first started, the first 3 months, I gained 20 pounds. I kid you not. And we were eating, like, the show was so frenetic, and we were doing at least 10 different recipes a show, 2 shows a day. And I was eating the entire plate. And there were big servings. And I remember thinking after 3 months, I'm like, I don't know. Secretly, I don't know if I want this show to survive, because I don't think I can physically take it. So I started to learn how to taste. I started working out a little more. And yeah, so, so I kept the pounds at bay.
A typical day for you exercising, what would that look like?
Well, I say I exercise, but I would exercise like once or twice a week. I hired a trainer to come to me because there's somebody expecting me to show up. I didn't want to pay for a gym membership and waste my money. So we use, I tell people that she can turn a baby's room into a torture chamber. So she comes to my apartment, and so whatever is there, she uses whatever is there. So I use my weight, my long limbs and hula hoops and like 5-pound weights. And we're walking all the way up the stairs. So I live in a building that's 16 floors. So we're using those steps. We're using the post of the stairs to lift my leg up and over, like anything that we're using my chairs to, like, you know, do those, drops, you know, as I'm sitting on the chair. So my trainer, who's Susie Q, whom I love, she can look at something and say, okay, we're going to use this. We went to a children's playground one time in the monkey bars, and here she has me doing these drops, and I'm like, oh my, I'm crying. And then she had me balancing on a seesaw. So anything, she's so creative in helping me work out, but it makes it fun, and she changes it up a bit.
You thought you were in for a treat going to
I know.
Yeah, playground. Talk to me about Daphne. That's Dr. Oz's daughter.
And funny story, when Daphne and I first started, people kept mixing us up. They would call me Daphne, and they would call Daphne Carla. And we were like, it's a joke, right? But people kept doing it. So it's kind of this inside joke with us. So yeah, Daphne is Dr. Oz's daughter, and she had her first hot dog on our show. So we tease her. She came in the first season doing tofurkey. She doesn't do that anymore. She's so smart, and she just had her first baby, Philomena. Her baby's name is Philo for short, and her initials are PBJ. If that baby is not going to be a foodie, it's set up to be a foodie. I mean, seriously. So we're going to welcome Daphne back soon on the show from being on maternity leave. But she is so fascinating, because here you have all of these cooks, but what Daphne would do that was so fascinating is look at the ingredients that we were cooking with and telling us what nutrients and things were going into the dish, which is a different way for us to look at it, because we were always looking at the ingredients in terms of being fresh and the aspect of taste, but not necessarily what we were putting in our bodies in terms of fueling our bodies. So it's a different perspective, but the two can work together, and I love getting her perspective.
So with Daphne in there, did the show evolve pretty much from maybe almost sometimes junk type food to something now more healthy, or
no?
Am I totally wrong? Totally wrong.
No, but what we try to do is to show a healthier side. We do all kinds of recipes. I mean, Michael focuses on, you know, so his Midwestern sensibility. So he focuses on not just meat, but people know him from meat and, you know, and foods from the Midwest. And Mario focuses on Italian foods, and Clinton does kind of entertaining. And so he will take it from the platter to a bite, and Daphne will do some healthier recipes, and I'll do Southern recipes. So it's just one of the things that we do, but we do have a segment where Daphne will rework a recipe that maybe Mario does and make it lighter, or one that I've done, and she will say, okay, let me lighten up that recipe. So that is one of her signature segments.
I know Mario, he's got a restaurant, maybe several restaurants.
23, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You also are pretty much a culinary expert in a field, and you do have a business or
two. Right. So I have, I don't have a restaurant. People are always asking me, well, Carla, when are you going to open a restaurant? I had a catering company, and the only thing that's left of the catering company, and I just have to tell the world, because I know you reach the world, I am a recovering caterer. But I have a company, Carla Hall Petite Cookies. Our cookies are the size of sugar cubes, because I don't want you to have to commit to one flavor. We have 10 different flavors, and they're sweet and savory. One of the popular flavors that we have is the Black Forest Crinkle. It is dark chocolate with cherry liqueur and dried cherries, and it's coated in powdered sugar, and it's that fudgy center. And then we have the pecan shortbread with vanilla salt. And that recipe, or that cookie, I use in my banana pudding. And that is in my first cookbook, Cooking with Love. And our chocolate chip is really popular, and we throw a little bit of cinnamon in there. But you can see all of the flavors that we have on CarlaHall.com.
Well, you could eat the whole box. I mean, they're only the size of a sugar cube and feel good about yourself, right?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I think women understand that. Women understand, and not to break it down to men versus women, but women say, oh, I can have a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and 10 cookies will do you. And, you know, and 10 cookies are about 100 calories. But the men are like, I don't understand why they're so small. When do you know that you get to the end? And they just want to, like, just eat the whole container, and because that's the beginning and the end for them. And I'm like, well, no, you save some. They're like, no, I don't understand.
Well, it's like a package of Skittles. You just put a bunch in your mouth and enjoy all the flavors.
Yes,
right?
or put the cookies in a bowl and pour milk over them and eat them like cereal.
In your new book, Carla's Comfort Foods, what would be one of the favorite recipes that you would usually cook, maybe at your house?
I think I definitely do the smothered chicken, but the chicken and dumplings is the one.
I know I had that at your house.
Did you? That's right. You had that at my house.
Yeah.
I love the chicken and dumplings. It reminds me of my great aunt Minnie, which is my granny sister, Freddie Mae's sister. And it's also a one pot wonder, because if you're in a rush and you it's basically chicken soup. But then because of the soft biscuit dough that you use, which become the dumplings, those dumplings make the soup part a gravy. So here you basically have chicken and gravy with biscuits in one pot. And I love it. I love that dish.
Carla, when I open this thing up, how intimidated will I be with the ingredients?
You're not going to be intimidated at all. I mean, I've really have taken all, I feel that I've taken a lot of the intimidation out, because they are ingredients that you will recognize, you know, and a lot of them, especially the spices, you know, you have already in your cupboard. I'm just asking you to think about putting them together in a different way.
If I want to find out more about Carla Hall, Carla's Comfort Foods, the Chew, anything else, maybe even where you might be, I mean, giving talks and everything, you have a website.
I do. I have a website. It's CarlaHall.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Carla Hall, or on Instagram at Carla P. Hall, and you can follow me on Facebook. I can't even believe all of these different social media outlets. Chef Carla Hall.
So what's next? I mean, your brand new book, Carla's Comfort Foods, you're looking ahead now, I'm sure, to maybe your next endeavor?
I'm looking ahead to my next cookbook, which I can't even believe I'm thinking about it. I want to do a dessert cookbook. I'm also working on a project in Reagan National Airport with OTG Management doing a restaurant, and I'm calling it OPR, Other People's Restaurants, you know, like OPM, Other People's Money. So I'm consulting, and it'll be Southern food, and you can find the pot pie that everybody knows and loves from Top Chef. So we'll definitely have the pot pie. We'll definitely have some mac and cheese, and we'll try to figure out the rest of the menu, but it'll be a good time. And it opens in 2015.
You know, talking about the Top Chef, what does it take to win Top Chef?
I think it takes, all of the chefs, first of all, cook very well. I think it takes somebody who can dig deep and be tenacious and who's organized, because a lot of it is like catering. I think you have to think fast, quickly on your feet. You have to be able to just kind of be a chameleon and go into a different situation and say, okay, it's a Gumby moment. I can't do this. I'm going to do that, and be flexible. So I guess that's what I'm talking about, flexibility.
I know I hear every once in a while with the cooking shows, and there are a lot of them now, mm-hmm. where they compete. They may be cooks, but they don't know how to cook this or that. Is that something that you kind of are taught when you're there, when the cameras are off?
I think that when you're there, there is a part of you. I think my most successful dishes were dishes that I wanted to eat, that I just kind of relaxed. And it's hard to tell people when you're in a competition, the biggest thing, the biggest way that you can actually move forward is to relax and not tense up. Then that's when the best food or what you'll be in your flow. And that's it's just finding your flow. So for me, I found my flow by making foods that I would serve people if they came to my house. You know, and I think, and other people have different ways of doing it, but that's what I did.
Well, the cookbook is Carla's Comfort Foods, Favorite Dishes from Around the World. Hey, if a few of the recipes made you hungry, just wait till you get that book. Check out the pictures. The pictures are fantastic with this. You're going to find out Carla's tips for each of these recipes, and the recipes look unbelievable. Carla, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's been really fun.
Been listening to Cover. I'm Mark DeWitt, along with Carla Hall, author of Carla's Comfort Foods, Favorite Dishes from Around the World. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.